Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Grey Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
Favorite
in the Kentucky Derby will be out of the race. One day out of the race for the Kentucky Derby is afternoon at 3 o'clock. 6 o'clock in the East. Same on the NFL, as with 255 players drafted, only one HBCU free agent. That's Jackson State defensive quarterback Isaiah Bolton by the New England Patriots. Last year it was four free agents. Last year HBCU free agents.
Yes, sir. Go next.
Let's go, Knicks.
You're the New York Knicks.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Last year, it was four free agents. This year, at the HBCU Combine, there are 45 players there at the Legacy Bowl. Miami will be also tonight or tomorrow afternoon. Will be the Miami Grand Prix. Lewis Hamilton has spoken out against the state of Miami for an anti-gay law. He will wear a multi-colored helmet to tell everyone they were on his side. Hamilton is the only black race driver on the circuit of Formula One. He has made it known that he did not like going to Miami and racing. Like he did not go to the Middle East at the beginning of the year with the same problem. News of the week. Sunday, the Memphis Grizzlies, Dylan Brooks was fined $25,000 for missing media after the game was over in Los Angeles. Dylan Brooks is going to have a difficult time to get employment after his antics in Memphis. The great St. Louis Cardinal broadcaster Mike Shannon passed away at 83 years old. I used to listen to him on the radio late night when the airwaves were thin. You can get the St. Louis Cardinal Baseball Network. We will be missed. Mike Shannon, 83 years old. The road to the hockey and basketball championship. Winning on the road, 70% of the road. And it's true with the Warriors, it's been 50-50. Tonight's going to be a key game. As the Warriors go to L.A. The hockey papers have been dismissed after the opening round, opening the door for new teams and new blood to be Stanley Cup champions. There will be a new Stanley Cup champion as the Colorado Avalanche exited. Monday, New Doggy Dog was the purpose out of our centers. I think it'd be good for the NHL. I'm a minority owner in the National Hockey League. Darryl Sutter gets fired by the Calgary Flames after missing the playoffs again. And last night, all of the players that wanted to leave rescinded their trade request because like Milwaukee Bucks fired head coach Matt Budenholzer after 5 years and the first round exit to the Miami Heat. The Bucks have been favored this year to win the NBA title. They had the best record at following the NHL Boston Bruins early exit. Oh, Donald Trump. Here we go again. The OJ, we're looking at Donald Trump's dealings with the Louvre tour. And you know that was coming because of the connection between Louvre and Trump. Rafael Nadal, who out of the Royal Masters, with a hip injury, and he might not make the French Open at the end of the month. Matt Harvey, a dark knight, who retired at New York Met. After 9 years of baseball, Harvey retires. I can't believe it's been that long. The Lady LSU Tigers, he's getting stronger as Chandra Ajay Morrow from the ball Blue Demons will now be a LSU Lady Tiger. We'll take a break, come back with more news later. my girl Tracy Tracy, yes sir. Now what y'all think about this? The three lowest payrolls in Major League Baseball are Oakland A's, Tampa Bay Rays, and Baltimore Orioles. Baltimore Orioles are in second place in the East. Tampa Bay Rays has the best record in baseball right now. Oakland A's are in last place in the West. Three franchises, three of the lowest, two of the three have the best records. The ones who have the highest payroll, the New York Yankees and the New York Mets, are in last place in their division. What does that tell you? What does that tell you? Friday night, the Mets beat the Colorado Rockies 1-0 in a game over in the fourth inning. Yankees lose the first game of the big series with Tampa Bay. RBI by Franco in the seventh inning. Rays win by 4. The best record in baseball. Right behind them, Baltimore Orioles continue their win streak. 9-4 victory over the Braves. 9-4 victory over the Braves. Keep it big with the Rays. Sean Murphy only in the 8th inning. Minnesota beat Cleveland 2-0 to keep their lead in the Central Division of the American League. Their 19th victory of the year. Giants were struggling to keep up with being the Brewers 6-4. Wilmer Floyd home run in the 8th inning last night. PGA. Last week it was the Mexico Abelarde for Mexico Open. Tony Finau wins, beating Rahm and Wu by 3 strokes. This week they had the Wells Fargo. Now, movie day and Lassie and Clark leave Jeffer and Spawn going into this today's play. Next week it will be the ADD Barnelli Classic. LPGA, last week, LA Open Anna Green. Anna Green defeats main manager Zhaolin in India Ashok in the playoffs in the LA Open. This week during the Bay Area, Iowa Championship. Last year won by Korea, South Korea. This year, Sweden leads USA in Pool A, while Thailand leads South Korea in Pool B with the Jernigan Sisters. WTA are closing in Madrid Open, the beginning of the Italian Open. At the end of the month, it will be the French Open at Roland Garros in Paris, France. Last week they had the NASCAR. Had the week off. This week they had Dover Motor Speedway. Dover, Delaware. On Monday, for the World 400, Mark Truex wins, beating Ross Chastain and Ryan Bailey. This Saturday at the Kansas Speedway at the FAL 400. Sun, Rabbi, and Red Bull Team 1, 1 and 2, Perez number 7, with the Clerk and Lewis Hamilton 5th. This week they're in Miami, with the Miami Grand Prix. The practice run, the Mercedes took 1 and 2 the first time in a year. Russell Hamilton took 1 and 2. The Ferraris, the Clerk, won third place. And the second practice, Verstappen comes back with the Sainz and the Clerk second and third. Third practice today, earlier this morning, Verstappen won the practice round. Leclerc, Negev, Perez, third. So we got front row for Sunday tomorrow. Front row tomorrow will be Verstappen and Leclerc. Hamilton will be number 9 in the grid. But the Mercedes wins. Silver Arrows. And the Silver Arrows have a tough time in Miami. We'll take a break, come back. It's so nice to have the name of twice. You know, tragedy has come to the horse racing community again. Today is Kentucky Derby Day. And we're going to have a couple guests. We're going to talk about that later on in the show. Also, the favorite will pull out of the race. Five horses have died the past week before the Kentucky Derby begins. Trainer and business bandit. Two horses in class have died. While earlier in the week, while on rice, while on ice, has been euthanized after he collapsed. Not been a good year for racing. Trouble right here in California. Three horses died right here, right near my house. We could be watching the end of horse racing, like the death knells of boxing. Boxing used to be the biggest thing around the world, and not that anymore. Horse racing is in the same pocket. Four days we got run this year. Debit Trice, the son of Debit, also hers, a horse, Dama, the Gatay, a horse from Japan. Well, I wonder how he got here. But this is very serious. You did not see the horse. And also the drug dealing, doping. Joseph got suspended. Doping horses. And they're like boxing. There's so many different entities. And no national organization. This is why I have problems. I'm going to go down the list of horses' names. And by the time we finish, I need Michael and Jenny from New Orleans to be on. Also, today is the 50th anniversary of Secondary, the fastest horse on the planet. In the prelims this year, the horses are racing at the same clip as Secondary. So you might see a record broken today at 3 in the Kentucky Derby. The preliminaries are the same ace as Secondary was 50 years ago. We might be witnessing a record. because there was a house on Canadian.
Here you're talking about the Kentucky Derby. Shocking events this past week. Five horses at Churchill Downs had to be euthanized. Among them, candidates that were going to run in the Derby. Medina Spirit, who won the Derby 2 years ago and was later determined to have been doped, resulting in the dismissal of George Baffert, the suspension of trainer George Baffert. Medina Spirit died that same year. Later that same year, died of a heart attack.
This is
really outrageous. I mean, suspending George Baffert would be like suspending George Steinbrenner from the Yankees. I mean, a major figure. You know, to have Medina Spirit die would be like finding, pick the candidate, Tom Brady being suspended after winning the Super Bowl when it turns out that he was doping, and then he dies later that year of a heart attack. I mean, this is outrageous. This is supposedly the signature event, the grand event of American horse racing, and the week before the Derby, five horses go down?
Andy, what was that? What's the problem with this? It's the same problem that Boxy has. You have 32 entities, 32, 34 different entities that are the ruling body of Boxy. You have 30 entities in horse racing. The 30 entities cannot get together and say, this is the one rule. This is the one way you can do this. They're all over the place. If I get suspended in California, I can take my bag and take my horse and go to New Jersey and race. That's happening. The same thing happened in boxing. If I get suspended in New Jersey in boxing, I got my bags to go to Reno. There's no governing body. I want to correct you on your analogy of football and baseball. There is a governing body. So this will never happen in football or baseball because a governing body rules over all 32 teams.
Well, we kind of saw it. I mean, Eddie DeBartolo was banned from football, basically, when he got involved in a gambling scandal. Yeah. But again, I'm just trying to draw an analogy here because people don't recognize, perhaps, the magnitude of Baffert as a trainer and the number of championship horses he has trained. I'm just trying to give some measure that to suspend a Baffert from a sport would be like suspending some other major figure, equally major figure from another sport. I mean, if George Steinbrenner or Pickett, Al Davis or Bill Walsh, some major figure were suspended from the support. It would be mind-blowing. Here we go, doping and horse racing, whatever.
Yeah,
if like the week before the NBA Finals, pick your team. The LA Lakers, the Golden State Warriors, five of their players die, on the court.
That would never happen. It's a
That's what's happening. That's what's happening on the track at Churchill Downs.
I'll tell you, that's because there's no ruling body. If you had a ruling body, this would not happen. The people in New Orleans have a different set of rules, and the people in California have a different set of rules.
Right.
You can't do it that way.
No, but you would think in the Kentucky, I'm going to guess and I'm going to venture that the Kentucky State Board of Racing, and I may be wrong here, obviously, because, you know, things are failing, is, you know, perhaps the blue chip organization. Okay. But again, whatever's happening when you're having, you know, at the blue chip arena, the major arena, you know, the first leg in the Triple Crown, and I would submit that the Kentucky Derby is kind of the most, you know, glamorous of these things. I mean, the Belmont and the Preakness have their own status, yeah. But I mean, you know, the mint julep and the fancy hats and all that, you know, the first sign of spring, the Kentucky Derby, and have five horses dying. You know, we saw this also down in Southern California, Gulfstream, the major track in California. Horses were breaking their legs left and right. I mean, the number of horses, you look at the totals, it's like dozens of horses are dying.
Well, I'm going to bring in my brother, Michael Lewis, in a second, but let me get this buddy crop before I bring him in. Until the racing board, board of racing, whatever they call it, until they have a national set of rules, this will continue to happen. We had three more up here in California last year.
Right.
Because every state has a different rule, and you can't. Boxing learned a cruel lesson that way. I learned a bad lesson by not unifying the rules.
You know, part of the problem, though, I think we've talked about this before, and I know we've exchanged literature on this. A three-year-old is still a very young horse. A three-year-old is like probably the equivalent, say, of a 15-year-old human. And, yes, you can look at a 15-year-old human who's playing AAU basketball, and you go, okay, these people are going to grow into being stars. But, again, you know, to submit a 15-year-old or a 3-year-old horse to the stresses of horse racing when the bodies are often not fully developed. You know, you've got a muscular torso with horses running on very slim legs and ankles that cannot support the weight. I mean, a lot of these, I mean, Mark McGuire, one of the reasons that, you know, he went down with injuries so much is, you know, with the doping, developing his upper body, you can't develop your ankles with PEDs. I mean, whatever force and torque you're generating in your upper body gets transmitted down to the ankles. He always had foot problems. Bill Walton, the same thing. You know, you are a prisoner of your skeletal system. You know, however else you may be tweaking yourself. And that's, I think, the situation with these horses. Is there, you know, they're being, you know, run hard, run young, very competitive, pushed into situations that they may not be physically ready for. And then even the way they calculate the birth date, a horse that may be qualifying as a three-year-old may in fact only be 2.5 from his birth date. So all of these are contributing.
Yes, I am. I'm just listening to the conversation, and that was a great analysis.
Michael, am I wrong about the lack of a national racing ruling board? Because the California rules,
there's nothing wrong with the fact that there's nothing uniform for the nation. That's the problem. When horses were dying at Santa Anita, nobody did anything because there was no true starting point. But the analogy that was made earlier, Bart, about these horses being teenagers, that's a good one. because 3 year-olds are roughly 18-year-olds in horse years. And ultimately, it's a good place to start, but it's not a great place to start. I think 1 year, they allowed for 4-year-olds to get into the mix where they waited a little bit longer and there were less accidents. The horses were healthier. And if Jenny has gotten on yet, I think Jenny would agree with me with that. But
yeah,
the long and short.
Jenny will be on in 12 minutes.
But the bottom line to all this is that you are playing high risk in a sport where it can be tragedy in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I can't say in all honesty just how much a tragedy was avoided in 2019 when Tyler Gaffalone, who was a jockey in the 2019 Derby, made a move that saved at least 4 riders' lives and 4 horses' lives because he missed the spot and compensated by steadying his horse. And he didn't check fully, but what he did allowed everybody to keep going safely as if nothing had happened. The jockeys, male and female, are the best pound-for-pound athletes in any sport, in my humble.
What is the racing board, what is the qualification to get on a, are there qualifications to get on a racing board? Is it just willy-nilly?
No, I can't say that. I know Jennifer would know, but what the racing board does do is what all organizations that regulate sport do. They cause more problems. They cause more problems than solve.
Let me see if I can call Jenny now. I'm gonna try to see if I can do it. Come on.
All right.
Any questions, Art?
Well, you know, we can perhaps continue to discuss this while you're making the phone call. You know, one of the things, there's an analogy between horses and boats. They say boats are a hole in the water that you pour money into. And a horse, there's some similar analogy that, you know, a horse is a way that you, feed the horse money instead of oats or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like with anything, you know, you want to, you know, okay, so you're feeding this horse, you feed him 3 years and run him out there to see what you have. And maybe the horse may go to stud very quickly or the horse may continue to have a racing career. But if you're waiting 4 years or even 5 years for that horse to race maturity, you've been, you know, pumping oats and dollars through that horse without any real result, any return on your investment. And, it's a money business.
That was a point that Jennifer had made a couple of years ago, when they changed the age situation in the Triple Crown because of COVID or whatever it was. The horses were healthier, and they were kind of running stronger. There were less accidents, and basically they're running at 3.5 instead of 3. And because of that, they were able to supplement.
Yep.
Is that Jenny?
Jenny in the house.
Yes, sir.
How you doing? How you doing, sister?
Oh, we're doing good.
All right, good. We have Art and Michael online. So, we were talking about the recent utilization of horses this week. What's going on?
Let's see. Are you talking about, what's his name? Forte being scratched last second?
Yeah.
No, not Forte.
No, hi, Jenny. We were. Right.
Jenny.
Yes.
What can we do to change the rules of these horses? Die on the track.
I have no clue what the heck is going on out there. The unusual deaths, I have no idea. Until the vet reports and everything come back, we're not going to know anything. And really, I don't know how much safer we can make it. Now, preferably, I would prefer to see them not start racing until they're 3 to 4 years old. You know,
yeah.
Back it up
yeah,
just a little bit so that the bones can catch up to the muscle strength.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that would be the biggest thing you could do. Just push that back. And not by a whole lot, just even 6 months to a year would probably make a pretty big difference in that.
We were talking, Jenny, about the anomaly, the tragic anomaly of having five horses having to be euthanized at Churchill Downs the week before the Derby.
And this is the record. We have never had that many scratches for one go-round like this since 1936, where it was also five lost. Now,
what did they do in 36? They changed the rules in 36?
Wait, say that one more time.
Did they change the rules in 36?
Did they keep it the same? Redo it in 36?
Like with the way Forte was scratched is because of a bruised foot. That it'll heal on its own. I wouldn't be surprised if he's back in Belmont in a couple of weeks. That ain't gonna surprise me at all. But those other deaths, you know, the one, what was that other horse's name? I just saw it. Chloe's Dream. That's a 3-year-old gelding.
Yeah.
And it was a busted right knee, and he was euthanized because there's an old saying with horses: no hoof, no horse. Leg injuries, they are dicey on a good day with everything going right for them to heal properly. But with horses being flight animals, they don't come out of anesthetics well, and they don't understand keep still and, you know, go easy. They don't get that. So that makes it hard to try to minimize that kind of issue. Now, collapse deaths, that's a whole nother ballgame. You're going to have horses that have heart disease, you know, aneurysms that burst, just like what happens with humans. But that's extremely rare.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier.
Easy to look at.
We were talking earlier about Medina Spirit, which, of course, won the Derby 2 years ago, was disqualified. For doping. Baffert then was suspended. And that same year, this is a little known fact, I just learned that this morning doing a little bit of research here, that Medina Spirit died of a heart attack that year.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, I mean, even yourself, who's a racing expert, you know, that fact had eluded you. And I was saying to Gary, it would be like somebody like, you know, Tom Brady wins the Super Bowl, but then gets suspended for doping and dies of a heart attack later that year. That would be news. But
be even younger than that. That would be the equivalent of one of the second-year star quarterbacks just getting started having that happen. Just something like
is there going to be, Jenny, is there going to be any rule changes after this, or are they going to keep it the same?
Change comes very slow to the horse racing world. Very slow. That is a good old boys network. Okay, that is the good old boys. Like, you know, that is textbook example of what a good old boy network looks like. They are slow. They do not like change. They are set in their ways. And, I mean, there is always room for improvement. Always. Especially when it comes to athlete safety. The safer you make it for the horses, it trickles uphill. It does trickle because that makes it safer for the jockey. So you got to help your animal less inclined to an accident or a collapse. Everybody's happy.
Here's another example. Barbaro, who I believe won the Derby. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
And then was euthanized on the track right after winning.
Barbaro spent years because he fractured the pastern, basically our ankle. He fractured the rear one. And they worked with him. He was healing well. But every time you turned around, there was another complication. He would go great, and they never raced him again. That's a career-ending injury, period. It's done. Mm-hmm. But they went for years working with that injury, trying to save it. And eventually, the complication caught up to him. And at that point, they had to stop and assess, okay, what's fair, what's not? Dragging it out and making, because that's painful. It hurts.
Right.
Just like it's not kind to a human to make them suffer in pain that you can't control medically, you don't do that to an animal either. So they made the decision. It was time to let him go.
Right.
Now, he did some time in the breeding shed. He does have progeny on the ground. So that wasn't a total loss. But that, again, it just goes to show when it comes to horse legs, even with the best of circumstances and the best care you've got to hand, sometimes most of the time, it's just not enough. Their legs are just too sensitive. There's very little muscle padding on there to protect the ligaments and the arteries and all of that. So it's a dicey situation on the best of days. The fact that he lasted that long after that kind of an injury still surprises me to this day. His owners are the only ones that can answer if they made the right decisions by it going that long. Only they can make that decision. Mm-hmm. They gave him the best chances that they could.
Michael, can you introduce this beautiful lady for us, please?
Excuse me?
Can you introduce this wonderful woman for us, please?
I think I can introduce her correctly
on the air.
This is my Cajun sister, Jennifer Thibodeau Bort. She is a proud Cajun and a member of the A-Bear Clan. She is my co-host, and we are looking to do a racing show, Paddock the Post, where we give everybody, not just 411 horse racing, but insight on why the sport really does have and deserve its own niche in sports, period.
Thank you for going on the air. I appreciate it. Danny, who is your favorite for the day?
Oh, for today, I'm not going to lie, I always like a tappet horse. I always love those. And watching that little gray working last week, I like what I see. He's pretty. And he moves nice. He wasn't, overly excitable. He seems fairly calm. So I'm curious to see what he's going to do today. But there's a number of them. You got Mage that likes to come from the back and give everybody a run for their money. I was excited to watch Forte do the same, but that got scratched. But no. And I'm curious to see what the Japanese horses are going to do.
I want to ask you, how do they get them overseas? How do they ship them here? Do they do it by airplane or do it by boat? How do they get here?
If I'm not mistaken, I think they fly they go by air now. I know back in the day it was by ship.
They do go
by
air.
But these days, if I'm not mistaken, they have a plane just for them.
Yep.
Wow.
They do gay
Wow.
And I know for a fact them horses fly better than we do.
Yeah.
I don't even think they used to fly better even in first class. Them horses got it way better than what we did.
Jenny, with all these horses, Michael was talking earlier, and I had mentioned it also, about the number of horses that were dying on Southern California tracks, Santa Anita, and I believe over a span of just a few years, very recently, the number was up in the dozens.
Yep.
And of course, we see now five horses died this year, this week, at Churchill
yep.
Downs. A number of horses were scratched, as you said.
Yep.
You know, all of that represents an investment. And
oh, tens of millions of dollars. Just
yeah.
On one
so
animal
why
alone.
Why would the owners and the trainers, I mean, the industry, be so cavalier about losing its investment? Now, you know, at some point they may look at, you know, a horse. Well, maybe it's a champion, or maybe it's a can of dog food, and you know, we'll just see how it goes. But they're still losing an investment when those horses
yeah.
break down.
Because it's not just, you know, the cost of the animal at weaning or yearling. And back in the day, you know, Nijinsky, too, set a record at $1.2 million as a weanling coming out of Keeneland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's tough change. You know, you're talking about horses that go for multiple millions as a weanling. Then you have all of the care. You got the grooms that are taking care of this animal day in, day out, rain or shine. You got the barn staff doing it. You got the groom. You got the jockey. You got the trainer. You know, all of this costs. This ain't for the. This is not for the cheapskates, nor for the poor. It's the sport of kings, literally.
Yeah.
So yeah, you. To me, if I were an owner, I'd be doing everything within my power to make sure that my animal is safe. And,
yep.
you know, you minimize as much danger to them as you possibly can. That's all you can do. There's some new regulations coming out, if I'm seeing correctly, about doping and all of that. I'd like to see that a little bit stricter. Baffert, you know, what he pulled, he did have some plausible deniability on that.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you can get a little bit of an edge, you take it. But there's sometimes where you do something like that and it just don't quite sit right. You know, it's
yeah.
that classic, just because you can do something don't mean that it's right, nor that you should.
That's right.
I don't think he should have done that. And,
no.
honestly, I would have rather see him own his bullshit and say, yeah, I cut it close, and I tried to cut corners.
And there's been no effort to prosecute.
Brush it under the rug.
Jenny, and there's been no effort to prosecute any of these perpetrators. In Santa Anita, it was said that Hollendorfer, the trainer, was connected to a lot of the horses that had been euthanized.
Yep. I don't like that. Somebody's head's got to roll, especially if you're going to try to hold yourself up as a strict governing body.
Yep.
Somebody's head's got to roll. You know, even if it's just for the look of it, somebody's got to pay a price. Somebody's got to get punished. But
you know,
it's like there's no move to do that. And when they do punish, it's a slap on the hand.
You know, other than the elite animals that you were referring to, there are many, many hundreds of far lesser animals in low-stakes claiming races running every day of the week.
Now, there's not as many as what it would look like on the surface, like what some overly zealous animal rights organizations like PETA would have you believe. If you listen to them, there's millions of foals just running through the slaughter industry, and it's not. That is not the case. You know, the numbers that go now are, you know, just barely into the hundreds of thousands. And when you look at the numbers just aren't there anymore. Once upon a time, yeah, there were a lot that were going. But rule changes, and people start, you know, people start to change and say, wait a minute, this isn't right. Just because we can do this, we really shouldn't. And they started limiting their numbers and to how many they would breed, just to try to minimize that. So that's a lot of weight. You know, that's like getting a ribeye, and you and it's mostly fat and gristle. What's the point of paying for all of that when you're throwing most of it away?
Right.
Is there one national board or one national regulation board? Why is there one?
I've never really paid attention to that part of it. With thoroughbred racing, it's the jockey club that does most of all of the big stuff in the front. And of course, you have your agencies that you know go through with the testing and say, okay, this is what's banned, this isn't, this is what's allowed, this is how much is allowed. You have all of those guys, but to me, if I'm not mistaken, I want to say it's with the jockey club. But I don't.
Well, the reason why I asked that question is like, if I have a horse in New Jersey, right? And I break the rules of New Jersey, I get to take my horse and move it to California and race in California. That's not happening.
Yeah, and in all honesty, that is something that's across the board in a lot of sports. You can get suspended here, but go over here and continue to compete. There's a lot of that goes on, not just in horse racing. Now, like what's going on with Joseph Jr. being pulled from Churchill, being pulled, that kind of thing does need to happen, and it needs to happen a lot more often than what it's doing. Because now I'm curious to see, you know, what's going to happen. Are they going to, you know, and what is the cause of those deaths?
Yep.
To know how he, you know, if he's going to be punished or if he should. Now, obviously, if it's a physical issue, like, say, an aneurysm, you can't punish somebody for that. That is just a freak of nature.
Right.
But if it's got something to do with doping, no,
right.
His head needs to roll if that's what's going on.
The necropsy won't tell the whole story. For example, Medina Spirit died of a heart attack. Okay, well, you know, people die of heart attacks.
Yep.
But, you know, when you know, and say they do all this thing, okay, well, it's an aneurysm, okay. You know, people get strokes, people get aneurysms, but, you know, when you're, what's going to increase your risk factor is what you're doing in your life. I mean, if you are, you know, a fat guy trying to run 100-yard dashes, you're likely to have a heart attack. And, you know, if you have a horse that's physically immature, is in fact 2.5 years old, running against 3-year-olds, and it's been pushed physically to its physical limits. And, you know, and we see this in the NBA. I mean, after the Golden State Warriors champion season, Durant went down with an injury. Klay Thompson was out for 2 years. Steph Curry, at the end of the season, was sitting in his living room one time and looked at his leg, and he saw a muscle knot grow and move in his leg, and he said, "This is a sign of my body just crapping out. We laid it all on the line. We won two championships in a row, went to the Olympics, the World Cup, all that stuff, and our bodies crapped out." And so, you know, a necropsy or, you know, a physical exam says, well, yeah, your body crapped out, but the greater issue is why did your body crap out? Were you pushed to the limit as a 2.5-year-old? You know, is your torso too big for your ankles or too big for your vascular system? And that's why you had an aneurysm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, and there's, you know, physical family history, kind of like with humans. Even in animals, there are family histories, family risk factors. you want to minimize your risk factors as much as you can. Like, say, you know, you have heart disease that runs in your family. You know, all the men started having heart attacks at 30 years old. You know, if you're 25 and you're not really taking care of yourself, y'all might want to get your butt in gear just to try to minimize that risk factor. You know, eat cleaner, exercise, minimize as many risks as you can. That way, should family history catch up to you, you can possibly bounce back from it because you took necessary steps to minimize how bad it would be.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you this. I understand this is the 50th year of Secretariat's win.
Yes.
How extensive is the bloodline descendant of Secretariat?
Oh, that was a half hour,
He was one of a kind. One of a kind. He is the gold standard of what everybody in thoroughbred racing is hoping to get. And the way those two bloodlines clicked is what created him. And ever since then, being that that set the standard, that's what everybody is trying to recapture.
And, so and has there been anything... Has there been anything coming out of that bloodline which is anything close to that championship level?
His son, Risen Star.
Justify performed really well, but not with the blinding flash like what Secretariat did. I don't know that we're ever going to see that again. But
no,
American Pharoah did pull out a triple crown, and so did Justify.
Yes,
and
he did.
Horses relied heavily on those original bloodlines in the same kind of combination that produced him.
Yeah, Jenny, we had to also throw Risen Star into the mix. Risen Star was a full son of Secretariat. He missed in the Derby, but he stomped the field in the Preakness and the Belmont, where he won by 15 lengths, and everybody said he looked just like his daddy. The thoroughbreds are like the horsey version of the Maury Show. Who's your father?
Are you a father or are you not?
That's right. You find out who your daddy is by the way that they run. But amazing
and
thing about
his daughters in particular, really did have some performance literally bred into them.
Mm-hmm.
But his value came from those daughters. They thought he was a dud when it came to the Colts. Mm-hmm. He is still, and he will probably always be, the premier food mare sire.
We got Jody in the house. What's up, Jody?
Because everybody focuses on these stud horses. And, yeah, you should. You should. But the broodmare is every bit as important, if not more so. Because that's where that colt is going to spend the most of his time coming up, is with his dam. And if she can't perform, that foal is not going to perform either. Now, do you get some mediocre broodmares that have winning sons? Yes, you do get it. But it's not... It's not consistent. It's hit and miss. But with Secretariat's broodmares, all of his daughters and granddaughters and on down the line, they were all, they had it. They still got it.
Mr. McLean, you have any questions for Jenny? Tony, you there?
I'm still here.
Jenny, I have one question, and forgive me if it's a little inappropriate, but, it's talking about bloodlines. Is there still any, what's called genetic material from Secretariat that's available for artificial insemination?
From him directly?
Yeah. Things that might have been withdrawn from him and frozen all these years.
not that I've ever heard. I've never even heard of a whisper of it. Because back then, oh, my God, our technology back then was nothing compared to what it is now. Now, in this current day and age, you ought to have some kind of semen stored somewhere for your horses in case of things like what happened with Barbara.
Yeah.
You know, that way you have it on hand. Now, if we'd have had that technology back then, oh, my God. You'd still be having all over the place. Oh, yeah. Everybody would be fist fighting to get a straw. Everybody. I'd be curious to see how those would sell far.
A couple of things to point out.
When a horse retires, does he get paid to retire? How does that work?
Well,
when they retire?
Yeah, when the horse retires, goes
dead.
Oh, they get paid for doing that. They get paid for doing that.
Well, yes, he can be.
Yeah, of a sort. Of a sort.
They
live a cushy life.
Yes, they do. They get their
when they retire to the breeding shed, they live a very cushy life.
And they go on
dates. Owner gets paid, right? Owner gets paid $1 million, right?
Well,
it's stud fees. If they're good enough.
Bank on those stud fees. Because that's where most of the stud value is.
Right. If they're good enough, they'll get paid a flat fee. Each time, Stormcat was probably the premier stud at the time. $500,000 to make a baby.
And Stormcat's got buku for probably on the ground. I mean, everywhere. You look around, man, everybody's throwing Stormcat as Lanya. Here you go. Look, I'm going to sell you a third.
That's right.
I mean, that's one where the name pops up so often these days. Stormcat is still heavily used.
Most definitely.
Wow.
Two things about Secretariat, I'd like for everybody to know, aside from the fact that it's been 50 years since he won the Triple Crown. He was Horse of the Year at 8. Is that Tony? He was Horse of the Year.
That ain't me.
He was Horse of the Year at 2 years old, which is very, very rare. There are thousands of horses competing around the world each year for Horse of the Year. But as a juvenile, you rarely get so much hype that you get considered for Horse of the Year. And in the race, in the Belmont, Terriet and Sham, of course, Pancho Martin, the trainer, tried to be aggressive and go after him and whatnot. He had Lafitte Tenkai go gun for him in the beginning of the race, and Secretariat put him away. And
ran the legs off of him.
Not just put him away, but this is how bad it was. Angel Cordero Jr., who is one of my favorite jockeys and one of the meanest some bitches to ever work a track. If Dick Dastardly was personified as a jockey, he'd be Cordero. Anyway, Secretariat ate his ass up in a sprint. He did 6 furlongs in 109.3. Now, we know sprinters who can't even come close to stuff like that. That's not a sprinter's time. Only the very, very best can run in that category. And Secretariat had put up numbers that were there with the top 10 at that time. So God only knows what would have happened if he had just kept going full guns like that. I know he had to slow up a little bit and ease as he got into the stretch, that long back stretch in Belmont. But make no bones about it, Secretariat was a bad mamma jamma.
And then some. And honestly, I don't think he ever really went with everything in it.
Jeez.
I don't think he ever went all out. Where to the point where he had nothing left to give, you know how they all do now, where usually by the end, you know, they're trying to dig deeper and there ain't nothing left.
Yep.
When he ran, there was always way more left in the tank, and they hadn't even tapped it yet. What he would have been able, I'd love to see what he could do in today's condition. You know, where we've gotten a lot better at training and care and nutrition and, you know, all of that good stuff. You know, if he was that great back then, with mediocre compared to what we got now, I'd be curious to see what kind of times he'd turn in today.
Oh, no shit.
How many records secretary have? How many records does he have?
Oh, I have no clue. I know he won by the longest margin. He set the records for fastest times run from the previous furlong before, especially that final race.
12 seconds.
The way it was run, usually that first half is run the fastest that they're able to go, and it gets progressively slower as they go to the end.
Uh-huh.
He did it completely upside down. By the time he got to the end, he was running faster than the fastest times at the beginning.
Wow. Because there are a couple horses this year close to his record at the preliminaries this year. Tony, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Sorry about before. You know, If you've ever heard the call of that race, you can of Secretary, you know, in the Belmont in 73, you hear I don't remember who the actual guy is. Secretariat by 12, Secretariat by 50. I mean, he's like going crazy. Look at that. It's an amazing call, just an announcer's call, because you can literally hear him getting like they said, getting stronger as the race went on. Well, 31 lengths he won by, right?
31 lengths. I'm sorry.
He wasn't even trying at that point. He was just cruising. Never showed him the stick. He never really dug to do it, and just each one faster than the one before. And
you talk about how, in a sense, now the whole bigger, stronger, faster, whatever, but what, I mean, for lack of a better word, what were they feeding him back then? You know,
I can imagine.
This was no knockoff Cheerios, that's for sure.
that was some of that fancy schmancy crimped and rolled stirred on sterling silver.
Rush for luck.
And the hell of it is, it was literally a coin toss. And Jennery saw something in Something Royal, and she wanted that colt. And she got what she wanted.
Man. I remember we were the first year of college. And I never watched horse racing. I never did watch it. For some reason, I turned the TV off for this one. And
You got to remember, he really had a way of exciting everyone.
You got to remember. I believe to this day, he is still the only, and I want to say this without offending, non-human that was ever voted, I believe, like AP Athlete of the Year.
He was the only equine to ever do that.
Before and since, there's never been another animal
that was the top athlete of the year.
Yep. Absolutely. And that's the thing. You know, now, I still have yet to see the movie. That's one of the few sports movies I have yet to see. But, you know, you have to remember, well, he was on the cover of Time. He was on the cover of Time. I mean, the only thing he didn't do was do the Merv Johnny, That's the only thing that was missing. And I don't think he did a Wheaties box either.
I think they came out with a commemorative one
for the 25th anniversary.
They should. But
at the time, and you know, I mean, you know, media back then, as opposed to now, is almost somewhat antiquated. I mean, you know, for good and for bad, you didn't have the 24/7, 365 frenzy that you have now. But you got to remember, you know, it's a cliche phrase, but that horse literally captured the imagination of the nation when he during that stretch. He was the bridge between Citation, was he not, for the last Triple Crown?
Hold on, let me look. Because when he took the Triple Crown, that they were on a 25-year drought.
Oh, the 25-year. Okay. Citation was like 48, 49, something like that. It was in the 40s, somewhere around there.
So that's about right. I'm not mistaken. It was him.
Because
it was a 25-year drought. And hell, what a way to break a 25-year drought with Secretary.
And see, it's funny because, you know, everybody remembers Affirmed and Aladar and everything, and we've had a few others, but I mean, it's not even apples and oranges, it's apples and mangoes compared to what Secretariat was able to do, and again, the horse racing community has yet to really, and you know, they've had certain moments or what have you. Sadly, when you had the disqualification 2-3 years ago, that probably got a lot of pub. But nothing compared to Secretary. And then didn't he have like a finale? Even after the Belmont win?
I think he ran one more race after that, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe he ran six more races, and he won four.
Oh, really? I remember, I'm going to show my age. Back in the day, on Saturdays, you know, everybody remembers Wide World of Sports. But CBS had what was called the CBS Sports Spectacular. That was basically their answer to whatever. And if I remember correctly, his very, very last race was shown on there. If I remember correctly. Again, it just shows you just how times have changed because, you know, the sad thing is they're going up at what, 6:30 today for the race?
Something like that.
They would have tried to put that on like, you know, network television. They would have tried to put that on like prime time.
If he would have raced now, that would be pay-per-view. pay-per-view. But yeah. It would definitely be a pay-per-view event.
Yeah. Secretary is the Ali of horse racing, because after he left and he made a little spark, Seattle Slough became the Larry Holmes of horse racing.
Yeah.
He was a triple crown winner. But everybody was like, who he? You know?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
He won, but it was like, but where are you? You're not Secretariat. And then there was a firm, Dolly Dar. One had to push the other for the greatness that they both generated. But believe me, Thoroughbred Racing needed Secretariat, and they got what they needed.
Yeah.
And then he went on, come to find out, after the Triple Crown, it wasn't just a handful of races he ran. He ran 9 more times. He won 6 of them, came in second twice, and he came in third once.
I think he was just messing with him.
Yeah. He was. But they didn't test him. They didn't, they never showed him the sticker. They just let him go.
Yeah.
Just to let him go. Here, go. And even with the second place and the third place, that is still no slight on his greatness.
Oh, God, no, not at all, not at all. You know, I this may be just a rhetorical question, but again, you know, and I don't mean to beat, you know, literally a dead horse, but with all the quote-unquote nuances and everything like that, why haven't we seen at least one other horse other than his bloodline take it to another level?
He was literally a flash in the pan. Literally. Mm-hmm. The odds of him ever existing were slim to none.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt we will ever see another like him. If we do, I'm probably going to pass out. I'm not going to say I'm going to drop that in one second, because that would happen.
And so will his competition as well.
That Johnson would fall out of that saddle. He'd be dead before you hit the ground.
Yeah. It's weird. Not weird, but it's always interesting when the Derby comes up and literally Secretariat's name always is mentioned and what have you. You know, we talk about impacts on certain sports, and let's face it, other than a few glimpses, moments, good, bad, and indifferent, horse racing, I think people forget horse racing was huge in this country.
It was
back
sport.
In the day. Yeah, but now
it was a big deal.
Yeah, the sport of kings.
Literally.
And here in the States, even poor folk they watched the races closely. Couldn't afford to buy a horse, but you could sure cheer that sucker on.
And they didn't have exotic betting. They didn't have. Like, you'd be able to win the Tony. There were no exactas or quinellas or trifectas.
Oh man,
or
please.
No way.
This was win, place, and show. And if you lost, throw away your dough. Literally.
Yep.
Like you said, there's so many. I mean, it's hard to say if there's more money made off the exotic bets than the. Would it be safe to say that maybe there's more betting done on the exotic stuff than the actual race?
Definitely.
I would say
without a doubt.
Gives you a better chance at coming away with a little bit of money in your pocket for your bet.
Sure. Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure.
What about
let's put it this way. I think in their, I'm trying to think like they think. I don't think that they, let's put it this way. unless you do get another secretariat or what have you, I think I think the sport has nothing to worry about in regards to them. Because, and I don't say this to disparage the sport. I just say that for you know, I just think that look between the big four, so to speak, they really don't need to get into horse racing.
Mm-hmm. No. And the secretariat did, you know, everything else that came after, it's almost an anticlimax.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, there's not a whole lot you can do that's going to really capture attention. You know, especially not after, I mean, a 31-length victory. What the hell?
Yeah.
You know, the winner would have to tap dance and, you know, put my heels, you know, and light himself on fire, you know, while doing a dance to be looked at.
And then get passed by Usain Bolt, but that's a whole other story.
Exactly. You know, and what better way? He set the record and he walked away, and that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
everybody's been trying to chase it ever since.
Yeah, that's another thing. He, you know, yes, he had those 9 races afterwards, but for the most part, he literally and figuratively went out on his own.
Oh yeah.
He went out on his own terms.
He set class all his own. And like I said, he is the gold standard. He's what everybody, all these breeders, all of these people putting their heads together, trying to hit just that one little click. That's what they're trying to recapture.
Yeah.
Either Michael Jordan, right?
Oh, Jordan can't come close to that. Let me go back to what I said about Secretariat running 6 furlongs and 109 and 3. If you look at the top 10 sprinters of all time and the distance they ran, I mean, you've got horses like In Excess, Artax, and horses that were maybe a little bit lighter but stronger. In the case of Artax, a little older. And when they make numbers like that, tell them stop. Secretariat ran that race at, well, let's just say 3.5 plus. And nobody was going to question whether or not he was running, you know, with any kind of doctored help or anything like that. But speed
was never any whisper of that.
And the sad thing is, if that was going on now, that's all you would hear about you know, just between social media and the regular sports media. All, you know, he would, you know, that horse literally and figuratively would be hounded every day.
Oh yeah,
Daddy,
it's not any moment.
Daddy, will there ever be another secretary, or will never see it again?
A part of me, you know, having watched it when I was 3 years old when he did it the first time, and it was electric. I would love to see that happen again.
Yeah, me too.
There's magic in it. Odds of it happening, especially in my lifetime, I'd likely actually grow 6 foot tall if it were to happen. And when I don't even make 5 foot tall, yeah, we ain't going nowhere, honey. But I would love to see it. I would sure love to see that happen again.
Yeah. Just one question for me. Since, you know, not in regard to today's race, again, you guys have probably already talked about it already, but since the quote unquote favorite is out, who should folks be looking to in regard to today's race?
I've got 3 pedigrees that I always count on. when I look at stakes races. AP Indy, with approval, and Tappet. And the reasons why I like them are similar. They're all very versatile. They all cover ground and conditions in a similar manner. But in this case, this race today, Jay and I had picked up the 5, Tappet Trice, the 8, Mage, and the Japanese horse, excuse me, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but it was the number 17. That's
German Soda Garcia, I think?
Yes.
Yeah.
That one. Those are the ones that we looked at and said, we like those. And King's March, the 6 horse, he could be a saver in terms of a long shot.
Okay. Well, I like Tepper because he just stands out, man. That dude just stands out. Remember, I see him on the TV and like, wow, what's that horse?
those AP Indy horses, they are consistent.
Yeah.
Just like with the old lines, you know, the Purdue Secretariat, you know, Northern Dancer, Seattle Slough, and all of them. All of the, you know, what came from them have all been consistent. That they're not, you know, the flash in the pan like what Secretariat was, but it's all consistent. You know, they perform, they make their money, and they're consistent.
Michael and Jenny, I want to ask both of you a question. How important, Michael told me many times, but how important is the jockey is to the horse?
Oh, okay, that's like a race car driver. Can have the biggest motor under that hood that you could, that money could buy. That car is not going to win that race if you got a shit driver behind the wheel.
Yep.
Even if you have a mediocre driver behind that wheel, they're not going to be able to get everything out of that motor and perform, you know, like you would with somebody that's got a lot of skill and a lot of talent to know how
I
to get through the gap to get to the front to hold that win. Your jockey is your race car driver for horses.
There's no question.
They got to have a bond with that animal, and they need to mesh. They got to be able to read them and know how to get the best out of them at the right time. The jockey is extremely important. He is the second or her. We got some girls in there, too, now, thank God. The jockey is literally half of the team.
Well, I know Michael educated me on jockeys. I paid attention to that. He talked about the guy. And 3 years ago, when he was doing it, 3 years ago, when people could have been killed, the jockey saved people's lives. So I pay attention now.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
What Gaffalone
like
did,
I said, they're half of the team.
What Gaffalone did, I should have gotten more attention because it really was a life-saving situation. To do your car analogy, if Gaffalone was driving, he would have saved a multi-car accident because of the way he was able to steer that horse and focus and keep her through those wet tracks and deal with the minimum amount of damage that could happen from the situation.
You know what? I also read, tell me if this is true, and the first 15 Derby winners were black jockeys. I was like, okay.
They were black.
Yeah.
Oliver Lewis, the first winner on Aristides, I believe in 1875. Jimmy Wakefield won a couple of derbies, but the bottom line was it was about money. when the brothers started winning and getting paid, that's when racing got whiter. That's when the jockeys got whiter. And that's when the brothers got chased out the situation.
It wasn't until you saw guys like Isaac Murphy and others come along afterwards that, you know, that just literally took it to a whole other level. I mean, I think there's still like awards and tracks that are still named after him. But just to piggyback, just to piggyback on what Mike and Jenny were talking about in regards to the jockey. Think about that. Now, you know, we all know that most of the jockeys are very, very small or small folks. But the thing is, they're controlling what's the average weight for most of these horses? 400, 500, 1,200.
No way, anywhere from 1,000 up to almost 1,400 pounds.
Good
A horse like the size of Secretariat, you're looking at a solid 1,200
miles an hour.
And here I get winded just bringing up my bags from the supermarket.
Pound for pound, jockey is the strongest athlete on the planet.
Yes, he is, and one of the most disciplined. Lafitte Pinkai Jr., the old pirate, one of our favorite riders, used to talk about how he maintained protein off a single peanut. Now, I'm sure he had to have other stuff, but there's no joke that you have to maintain your weight. Otherwise,
at
you sweat the box. And
not unlike supermodels and ladies' gymnastics, there's a lot of binging and purging that goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, ouch.
A lot.
And having said that, there are awards that some of the jockeys finally get credit for. The Isaac Murphy Awards. One of my best interviews was with Russell Bays, who used to ride out Northern California. He won the award, and he knew who Isaac Murphy was. He knew about Mr. Murphy's legacy, and he credited Isaac Murphy with being an icon. And Thoroughbred Racing doesn't see too much of that stuff. Fortunately, insiders, the people who do the work, they don't forget.
Oh, no.
No,
it's funny because the black jockeys sort of went the same way as the black caddies as well.
Yep. It's an ugly truth, but it's a truth nonetheless, and it needs to be spoken.
Yeah.
It needs to be spoken, and at least on a positive tip, in Canada, there are large communities of riders coming out of Woodbine. You know, we've seen great riders like Patrick Husbands, Emil Ransami, and they go to other tracks like Fairgrounds and Fort Erie once the season is over and stuff, but they at least get the chance to ride. Here in the States, there are very few black American jockeys. Kevin Krieger runs out of Gulfstream, and I forget this brother's name, but he runs out of the Ohio track. Parker. I forget, Deshaun Parker, thank you, runs out of those tracks. They're consistent with the number of winners and top leading jockeys every year. But, you got to pick those brothers and sisters out. There was a black woman who was there for a little while, and then she was gone. I can't remember where she went to, but she didn't continue to ride.
Right.
I'm gonna have to do some digging and find out.
All right, Jenny, we'll go up at the end of the hour.
Diversity.
You have any last words before I go off the air?
Not really. Everybody enjoy your day, and may the race go off with no injuries to nobody, no animals, no humans.
Yes,
everybody
yes,
comes in.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. We come back again. Anytime.
Oh, you know I enjoy it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Take care now.
Thank y'all. Y'all have a good one, guys.
Right.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Any last words, gentlemen?
I echo what my sister said. No harm to any of the riders or horses. If you got a bet going, good luck. If you win your bet, don't forget to give me some. aside from that, everybody have a good day. And, give me some Yakame or some Etouffee. I'm wanting some New Orleans food so bad. So, yes.
What is the actual time of the post?
3:17.
Oh, there you go.
3:17.
Okay. Well, considering the fact that the Knicks are getting the Miami has opened up at least 78 cans of whoop ass in South Beach, I might as well just go ahead and turn to NBC right now. But I wanted to my thing is, now granted the Canadians got to the final couple years back in the year of the bubble. Where they were playing the Stanley Cup Finals. Well, I guess, no, I take it back because they did actually play a couple of games in the Forum. But it looks like, barring something whatever, that there may actually be a Canadian team that gets to the Stanley Cup Final this year.
I don't know after last night.
I know the Toronto fans sort of take it day by day, but, I guess the thing with Edmonton is, we talked about this last year around this time, is that the goaltending situation, I mean, you can't, you really can't win 7-5, 8-6 in the playoffs, but they've been
crazy. I have never seen it before.
Well, the crazy thing is the most balanced team, as much as it's weird to say, the most balanced team may be Carolina.
Yeah, what they did in New Jersey last night. This is what Carolina did last night.
No, although I saw bits and pieces of it. I was like, goodness.
Yeah. They shut down Jersey's forward.
Do you think I know it's two games removed, but do you think it was a letdown after going 7 with the Red, White, and Blue Idiots on the other side of the river?
Yes. I think they were so focused. There was no focus on beating the Rangers. They lost the focus on Carolina.
Well, I mean, basically the series hasn't started because the home team hasn't lost yet, and that's usually the notorious. So if they're at least able to hold their own at home, this time of the year, you want to, it's about stealing wins on the road. We saw that with Florida in regard to the Bruins and Edmonton as well, versus LA. But that's the thing,
I'm looking forward to see a Florida Eastern Finals. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, well, it definitely could happen. Although, I think now that Toronto's gotten, King Kong and his uglier cousin off their back, it should bode well. But
you know, but again, you know, when you lose a game at home, everything changes. So it's very important. But yeah, it's
and
you
the Vegas Knights. Tony, I don't think anybody's gonna beat the Vegas Knights.
Well, you know, But didn't we just say that about a month ago about the Bruins?
Yeah, but the Bruins were a lot older
yeah.
than the Vegas Knights.
Yeah, that's true. And I believe they still have a few of those guys left over from that first cup run, right? Not a whole lot, but you know, they still have
yeah.
a couple of guys on there.
And, we'll know tonight.
What's going on tonight? Yep, definitely. It's you know, all the playoffs on both ends are starting to heat up.
This is Gary Gray speaking. They defend Connor McDavid too much. I think that you can't rely on this kid for everything. That's what everything's doing. It's
a backfire on him. Well, you know, you still got Dreisaitl and Kane there too. Although they, to Vegas's credit, they've basically have made them to somewhat obsolete, not so much obsolete, but they've taken them out
yeah.
of their game early on. But you know, it's still early. It's not early, but you know, like you said, tonight is going to have a huge bearing. And
yeah.
and with Jersey, I mean, Jersey season basically hangs in the balance tomorrow, or is it it's tomorrow, right? They're in Jersey tomorrow.
Day.
I thought it was tomorrow. You know, to be honest with you, it's been, I mean, I thought after the first round that they wouldn't spread this thing out, but it's, you know, like, for example, you know, like the Knicks tied the series.
Because
the Knicks tied their series Tuesday night, and they're just playing game three today. So it's say that they're dragging things out to say the least,
the NBA is really doing some stupid stuff in the NBA.
Well, see, their thing, they want to do an East-West game every night.
And
that's, you know, and I know they're supposed to have X amount, you know, TNT gets the X amount of games, and the Mouse and ABC get X amount of games, but
yes.
the continuity makes it just really. And like I said, I'm used to it for the first round. We're in the second round now. I mean, let's TV be damned. I mean, I get, you know, the games are gonna be on. It's not like nobody's gonna watch. You know.
I'm showing my age now. When the Rangers played the Bruins, or when the Flyers played whoever, it was every other day, no matter what.
It was every other day. Oh, yeah.
Every other day, no matter what.
Yeah. But see, also, the TV thing wasn't as big then either because, you know, now, what is it? For us showing our age, in our formative years, NBC was the only one that was doing the national games.
But they only did the
finals though, right? They never did the playoffs.
They just did the finals, right?
CBS did.
What CBS did was your local team and the finals. That was it.
Yeah. They didn't. You know, because see, you got to remember, most of us here,
the only time we would see the Canadian teams were
in the playoffs,
or in the finals, because you know, unless they played somebody local,
yeah.
When the Islanders played Toronto, in those years before they got to, they finally broke through in 1980, they only played, I think, a handful of Canadian teams in the postseason.
I can remember the Rangers, the Rangers would play a road game on Saturday night. That's how I became a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, because I saw Maple Leaf game, the old Maple Leaf Gardens.
Oh, Maple Leaf Gardens. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. The traditional. Oh no. You got to remember, us here in the States, I don't think I saw my first quote unquote game from Hockey Night in Canada until I was out of college.
Well, I didn't see any Canadian games until I got to California.
Yeah. And same here. I mean, unless they were playing.
That was in the middle 80s.
Yeah. And see, now, at least now, you know, thankfully, all the games are on now, and I think that's the thing. And because see, they want, you know, the whole thing. I mean, it's the good and the bad and the honest in regard to this, because they want to be able to give you at least, if they can, two games every night. That's the thing, you know, because the worst thing the NHL did was get that contract with Sports Channel.
Yep.
Because they I think they maybe gave you one, maybe two games during the week. And
yep.
Now, luckily, a lot of the teams at that time had contracts with Sports Channel. I know, like, you know, the Islanders, you know, for years, they split games between Channel 9 and Sports Channel. Most of their Sports Channel was sort of the, you know, for folks in the West, for folks in the East Coast, the YES Network, the SNY of its day, and I guess for you folks down there, Comcast. What is it? Comcast West Coast or Comcast California or
Golden West.
Yeah, because they basically had when you started seeing more emphasis on these regional sports channels, it changed. It changed it for the better in some instances, but then it sort of isolated it, because I know
and then NBC got greedy. Now NBC got all baseball contracts.
See, there was never another. See, when they were in their heyday, and ESPN had a bunch of games. Remember, ESPN at that time was also doing the NBA, Major League Baseball. So they were putting a lot of games on ESPN2
and ESPN yeah. News and what have you. So it made it tougher to find. Now, the regional networks now, and even in some cable systems, they've, you know, depending on where you're at, they allow some of these networks that are outside of your general area. And then, of course, you know, you had the superstations, you know, TBS, Channel 9 in New York, WGN in Chicago, and that made it a little bit easier. But, again, we always got shut out in regards to the Canadian teams. You know, hockey night, you know, it wasn't like anybody here in the States was bringing in Hockey Night in Canada. Now,
now,
if you have IPTV or even if you have some of these like Hulu or whatever, they have some of these Canadian stations, so you're able to.
Yeah.
But see, now you're having all this craziness with, I guess, was it Bally Sports, formerly Fox Sports, these Fox Sports generic ones. Bally's has been Bally's has like had to declare bankruptcy in some of these states. In fact, I guess the Phoenix Suns have come out and said that they're going to put a bunch of their games next year free TV. And that's, you know, we all remember when, I mean, we all remember when, you know, a lot of your when majority of your team's games were on regular TV. Now, if you use baseball as an example, the Yankees in particular, unless you've got the YES Network and or Prime and the Prime, unless you catch them on a handful of nationally televised games on MLB Network possibly or Fox, you won't see them. And I think it's I think what it is isn't like the borough, isn't like part of the Bronx still not able to see the Yankees, and they literally are right outside. I mean, literally people that live right outside the Yankee Stadium still aren't able to see the Yankees.
Yo, WOR, I don't remember this. WOR, back in late 60s, early 70s, they broadcast almost every home game the Reds played.
Oh yeah, they did 130 games. They did 130 games. All they had, you know, they had those games. The other 35, you know, maybe like a couple of them would be on NBC. Basically, now all of those games now are they're all cable because, like, I think like the Red Sox. I think as use the Red Sox as an example.
Nesson.
Again, I think Nesson does 140.
Yep.
I mean, think about that. That's like, I mean, you get 20 games. I mean, that's barely one game. That's barely one game a week on like and the thing is, they don't have a free on the air. For the longest time, they were on WSBK TV, but none of those games. Everything's on Nesson now. Everything's on Nesson.
I want to bring this up with you before I get out of here. The Florida Tampa Bay Rays and the Baltimore Orioles are the two, and the Oakland A's are the three lowest-paid teams.
In regards to...
The Tampa Bay Rays are first place.
Yep.
The Baltimore Orioles are second place, three games behind Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the biggest salary team, the New York Mets,
Well, put it this way. One, it is still early. I know that gets old as well, but it is early. But also, look, it's always been about, it's not so much about who's having the biggest payroll. It's about what you do with it. Because remember, Baltimore, those years under, you talked about Baltimore, those years where Angelos was out there basically trying to buy a pennant, they struggled. We all know how, put it this way, Gene Autry had to shoot Trigger a couple of times before the Angels could, before the Angels would become prominent. But not, look, it's always been about what you spend it on. The Mets having the biggest bill, there's good, there's pluses and minuses with Uncle Steve, so to speak. Yes, they have the ability to go out and get guys. And me personally, I've been screaming, can we get another bat, please? But that's another 2-hour story in and of itself. But it's not what you spend, it's how you spend it. Now, I think that I came out and said I think Baltimore's, and I still hold true to this. I think Baltimore will win the American League East this year. Me personally,
I've always said this. The first month and a half of the season is where you can create space. First month of the season, you can get close in the playoffs.
Well, yeah, I looked up
85% of the time has been correct. If you get a good start at the beginning of the year, you will be in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
I want to see Tampa Bay and Baltimore follow this pattern.
Well, I'll say this. If you're a first wave, if you're a team that, is like, let me give an example. Say you're a team like, say, the Titans.
No.
It's. Look, they're going to be in the race. I don't think they'll fall off the face. I'd be shocked if they finish the year in last place. But, Gary, as much as I hate those assholes, they're not going to finish last. And to be fair, everybody has a winning record in the AL East too. So, yeah, they're in last place, but they still do have a winning record as opposed to some of these other last place teams.
I am not impressed with Boone.
The thing with him, see, he's willing to do the whole analytics thing, and that's basically why he still has his. That's basically why he still has his job. Joe Girardi was like, "I'm not going to do analytics. That's one of the reasons why I give Tampa their due, but you can only go but so far because, see, when you do everything off the analytics, it comes back to bite you. Blake Snell hasn't been the same pitcher since he got screwed out of Game 6 a couple years ago. That guy was pitching the game of his life. And literally because of analytics, he took that shit out. And he's never mentally been the same since. I mean, that's the whole thing of the analytics. It's because you are such a slave to the numbers. And look, I get it. We all know that baseball is a numbers game. But when it becomes such a numbers game that it literally and figuratively takes you away from what you're doing, because, with all due respect to the Dodgers winning that series, do they win that series if they have to go to a game seven, it ain't guaranteed that they would win. There's no guarantee that they win. I give them their credit for winning it because that was basically their, you know, because they had done pretty much everything in that era except win a World Series. So it was just their due. But that being said, and I know it's almost 2 years ago now, but I wonder how that plays out if Blake Snell was allowed to, at the very least, finish out that inning or what have you. I will say this, because baseball is such a long season, and also you got to remember the one big caveat now are the multiple wild card things now. That's a caveat, remember Billy Martin's first year with the A's? They won 90 games. Well, they won 90 games, but they missed the playoffs. If they had had the wild card back then, who knows what would have happened if they had gotten in? See, at least look. I was somebody sent me a clip, and I actually put it out on social media. One of the talking dweebs on SNY, they have a show on there called Baseball Night in New York. And literally a year ago when the Mets got off to their fast start, he was basically saying, hey, the NL East is a wrap. The Mets are going to win this. The Braves aren't even going to hang out. And the Phillies, please. Now, we all know how that all played out. Mets didn't win the East. Now, Atlanta wound up winning the East, but who wound up getting to the World Series? The Phillies.
Yeah.
So it's got to, you know, it's got to be played out. Now, as I told someone else earlier this week, getting swept by the Tigers is not good. There's nothing positive you can get out of that.
No.
I'm not panicking. I'm concerned. All that did, you know, again, I go back to something I said, you know, as great as the team that they put together, I still would have liked to have seen them get another big bat. I'm hoping. I still think it's something that they need to do. The quote unquote look. The two old guys aren't doing their job right now.
No.
Plain and simple. Mm-hmm. Plain and simple. They're not doing their job right now. And
what happened to Dark Knight?
He officially retired. He officially announced his retirement. I think it was Friday. Just, you know, I mean, it's. I guess he had been trying to hang. I guess the last thing that he had did was he was trying to catch on with one of the teams that was in the World Baseball Classic, but he wasn't even able to hang up there. I mean, it's the ultimate what could have been story. You know, it's funny because before last night's game, they did a little the SNY crew did sort of a retrospective of his career. And yeah, when you look 5 year window that he had, he was spectacular, but he wasn't able
man,
to sustain
that
it.
That guy was right there, man.
Yeah. Like he had, you know. And the thing was, you know, a lot of it was physical, but a lot of it with him was also mental. You know, he got caught up in being a prominent athlete in New York, and he started smelling himself, as the kids say. And,
I am not pleased with Scherzer and. I was not pleased that trade. Okay. What's this move going to do in New York?
Well, look, whenever you give any pitcher a contract more than 2 to 3 years, you're asking for trouble. And when you do it with a guy that's already on the other side of 30, you know, whatever. Now they gave Verlander 2 years, but it's the sort of thing where, well, a lot of it has to. So you look, let's be honest, and I said this a year, a year ago. The main reason why DeGrom is in Texas is because of that surgery contract.
Yeah.
They made him the highest paid pitcher in all of baseball. Now, a lot of that was reputation because he'd had the multiple Cy Youngs and what have you. And to a certain extent, it was earned. But
yeah.
You're still, you know, let's put it this way. I still think that there's something left with both of them, but is it going to be
I'm not impressed with surgery because I saw surgery years ago when he was with Detroit, when he played with Detroit, and he beat the crap out of Oakland A's.
Well, but see, Gary, to be fair, he won a couple more Cy Youngs after he got out of Detroit.
Now. Oh, yeah, he did.
He did. I know what you're saying. Look, they still are going to need for him to be, you know,
if he's just average, I'll be average.
Well, see. And now it's all more pressure on the Tyler McGills, the kid that came over from Japan who has pitched well. I think he's probably pitched well, better than people thought that he would. But see, you know, now the Carrascos of the world and the Joey Lucchesis of the world are asked to become, you know, guys. You know, and now with Carrasco. I think Carrasco is still solid. You got to remember, he won 70. Carrasco arguably was your best pitcher last year before he got hurt, and he's still struggling this year. Tyler McGill pitched well early on, and then sort of came back down to earth. Now this year he's been, you know, he hasn't even come close. And if I see David Peterson again, I'm like, you know, enough already. At this point, he makes Steven Matz look like, you know, Sandy freaking Koufax at this point. But I'm concerned, but I, you know, it's way too early to bury. Baseball is the ultimate marathon.
Why did the best career of Wilmer Flores?
Where would he play?
He got traded in San Francisco.
He doesn't play outfield for them. He plays first base for them.
Yeah, but first base.
Stop. Oh, you're gonna sit down the polar bear?
Well, I like
Flores too. Matter of fact, he probably would be a good DH at this point in time right now. But
for the most part,
right now there's no position where he's going to be. No, he's not going to play shortstop. He's not going to play first base.
I
get it. Look. I would much rather have Seth Lugo than Ottavino, but Seth Lugo wanted to be a starter, and you know now I wouldn't have had a problem with him being a starter, but personally, but it's in many ways it was like with DeGrom. I think he made up his mind that if I'm not going to be able to start here, I'm going to go somewhere else where I can start. And, you know, all you can do is just, hey, tip your hat to him and hope he does well. He's done fairly well in San Diego so far. But with Wilmer, I mean, I love Wilmer, too. Look, Wilmer's always going to have a special place in the heart of Met fans forever, no matter where he plays or what have you. But there really wasn't a place for him. You know, the only other possible positions could be either second or third. And look, to me, Brett Beatty is the next, you know, barring injuries or what have you, Beatty is going to be in the third baseman hopefully for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years or so, and get better. And, you know, Jeff McNeil just won a batting title. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to sit him. I mean, now, see, that's the thing. Jeff McNeil can also, is a little bit more versatile. Jeff McNeil can play third. Jeff McNeil can play in the outfield as well. Wilmer, only other one other position. That's it. If Wilmer could develop as an outfielder, maybe he's, you know, could see, hey, look, I wanted, I'm still upset that they let Dom Smith walk. But he was never, you know, did he, he's with the Nats. And sadly, he's getting about the same amount of playing time there as he's got. Although it seems like they're trying to get him in. I think they're, I think he's not the everyday first baseman, but he's, from what I can gather, he's playing every day. And he wasn't getting the same consistency. One of the biggest problems that they have had is that they haven't gotten any consistency out of DH, whether it's Vogelbach or Dom a year ago or Ruff or what have you. They haven't had a, dare I say, like, say, a Nelson Cruz type or let me think of some other guys. Even a Giancarlo Stanton when he's healthy. They haven't even had a guy like that. They have struggled mightily with that whole DH thing. And it's cost them, because invariably what has happened with them is on the nights that they get good pitching, they can't hit. And then on the nights that they get lousy pitching, they hit. So it's frustrating. And it all culminated with the Detroit, because Detroit, please wait, Detroit was the worst hitting team in the majors coming into that series. And they made them look like the friggin' 27 Yankees.
For real. All right, so, man. Have a good weekend. Enjoy your weekend.
I'm switching over there right now. Thank you for reminding me.
Okay, take care, bro.
Bye, man. Talk to you.
All right, later.
Take care.
All right, good night, folks. Have a good week. See you next week. Same bat.